Well, let's talk about your work. The Carisdale Elegies and Aliphanes are just a couple of your serial poems. What advice would you give to people aspiring to write longer poems like those, and how to maintain the energy of a long poem?
Start early.
In the morning?
Or no, in your life.
I have a lot of, most of my poems are book-length poems, and but they're not, I don't pretend it's all one big long poem like some people do, right? Some people say, hey, wait a minute, it's a good marketing plan to have this as like your lifetime poem. So even though they, like some parts of it are way different from other parts of it, right? I don't do that. I've been tempted a few times, but I don't do that. I think, I don't know, it's like, I usually find myself finding some kind of way of diverting my attention so that the ambition to write a long poem on a given subject is not so much there as the trying to get through the minefield that I've set up to do it. So I might have a poem, I might have a book that, I'll give you an example. One of the poems I wrote, Robin Blazer is giving a course, a regular course at Simon Fraser University, which means he's meeting 8 hour, like two-hour sessions a week to this class over 13 weeks. So there's like 26 two-hour sessions, right? Plus a little extra. I think it might have worked out to 20 or something like that. So I wasn't a student anymore. I was somebody else, but I decided that I wanted to write a poem given this opportunity. And so his lecture, because he's very, very erudite, and he's going to bring like everything that's ever happened in the language of poetry to every class he gives. And he's going to be over the heads of 90% of those kids that are in there just trying to get a credit, right? But the course is supposed to be on Joyce and Yeats. Well, it's 13 weeks long. At the end of 11 weeks, he was still sort of like getting into Yeats, which is Robin. He's like that all the time, right? But in order to do that, like every time Robin would come into the class, he would be carrying 15 or 20 huge books with bookmarks in them, just so that he could give you a quotation from an Albigensian source or something like that, that's useful for what we're going to say about the introduction to what might turn out to be Yeats later on. So I decided, I got this notebook and a pen, and I went in and I sat in all these classes in the back, didn't say anything ever, and just started writing. So he's lecturing. I have been reading all kinds of stuff meanwhile, and I've got stuff open on the desk and so forth like this, and I'm just writing and writing and writing and writing and writing. So what's happening is, he's talking. I'm hearing from other sources that I've been reading overnight, and it's got the stuff beside me like this, and there's this like huge poem comes out, and it's a, I guess it's a collaboration, in a sense, but it's a kind of response too to what he's doing. So that was like a way of, I was writing a long poem, but I was being diverted all the time. I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah, right? Your ego didn't know. Your editor mind or whatever. Yeah, but you're onto something. Well, I've got a bookmark right to that page. How convenient is that?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is number... Well, this is number one. I'll read number one and maybe another one. I always pronounce it Aliphanes.
Is that right?
The book was published. Absolutely gorgeous the way it was. Coach House published the book. And it's dedicated to Robin Blazer. One. So this will be the session from listening to one day... Oh, okay. The snowball appears in hell every morning at 7. Dr. Babel contends about the word's form striking its prepared strings endlessly, a pleasure moving rings outward through the universe. All sentences are to be served. You've tried it, and it can't be done. You cannot close your ear, i.e., literature must be thought now. Your knee, O class equal poet, will like use a simile because he hates ambiguity. The snowball says it. All sentences are imperative. This is about 9 things buried in there, right? Part of it is Jack Spicer and his image of the snowball in hell. And the Jack Spicer gets into this this poem a lot. So here's the section. Ego Dominus Teus, O Yah, who are you? Quote, I am thy God of love, unquote. Te, I do not love literature. Books are my companions. We grow old together. We will never meet in hell. And you think this life is lonely? Among earth, sky, mortals, divinities, the obscure lies necessary to the luminous, to make seeking take place of the random, random, passive, the mental. Lose it, bubby. Spirits, rejoice. The snowball is not the cold. The free-standing flame is seen in the pool you enter with your last wet page. The work is henceforth the author dead, the book beside you, a face of the world to which it was always leading. That's the second half of section three. It's a philosophical poem, the main intent of the whole poem is philosophical. But like one of the quotations in there, it says something like, spirits rejoice, right? Which is the name of a song by Albert Eiler. And actually, I think an album by Albert Eiler, which does one of the pieces of music that I was listening to at the time a lot that finds its way into the poem, right? It's got all kinds of quotations, mainly of jazz, of well-known jazz things. It also has a drawing of Astarte and then a little bit later, Astarte becomes involved with baseball, and because it's got involved with baseball, it's got Jack Spicer in it, and it's got like an Aleph, right? The Aleph, a beautifully drawn Aleph, which is like really important in the section called the Holy Gobbler, which is another way of saying the Holy Kabbalah, right? And so the Kabbalah thing is like enters the thing there, and here is like the image for, nobody knew what this was. Steve McCaffrey wrote a really, really nice review of this book, but he called this a gestural figure in it. But what it is, it's a symbol for the god Yesod, right? Old Semitic god Yesod. And it looks like a number nine, right? Which connects with, you know, baseball. And
and eventually everything.
Yeah, and the poem gets more and more and more and more complex. And it's part of the reason I really like it. And then it ends, the last jazz piece that's alluded to is Paul Blaise, Mr. Joy, which was written by his bass player's wife. But in this one, it's called Mr. Warm and so forth. But it has to do with Mr. Warm and, oh God, the bass, the snowball and so forth. Like one thing that happened to me was the Spicer connection. Remember Spicer, his early book about his letters written to
Federico Garcia Lorca?
Yeah, to the Lorca ones, right? So one time I was reading those. I was at my mother-in-law's place and I was sitting there reading that book, and Jack Spicer's voice came into my head. I remembered his voice. He had died a few years earlier. And his voice came into my head and said, the snowball appears in hell every morning at 7. And that's why that line is like in the poem, and why Spicer's running through the poem all the way through it.
Yeah.
There was a funny thing in one of Robin's classes, a different one, that I just went to for some reason or another, and he was reading some poems of his own and some poems of Jack Spicer's. And these kids that are in there for credits, they're like, their eyes are drooping as Robin's reading his own poems and so forth. And then he starts reading Jack Spicer poems and spines straighten, heads snap up. This is amazing.